From theunts.com, this is the Unts Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunts.com. Hello and welcome to the Unts Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest on this week's program is Jason Han. Han has been a drummer for decades, making music with such varied acts as Yusu N'Dour, Isaac Hayes, and Dr. Dre. His latest project is the live improv house drum and bass dubstep duo Iodo with String Cheese Incident bandmate Michael Travis. Let's get right to the interview. Did your partnership start with Michael because you were asked to join Cheese, or did you know each other beforehand? Tell me about the birth of your partnership.
Back in 1995, a band that I was in called Zoo People, we were playing at the High Sierra Music Festival. And that's when String Cheese was playing there. Travis had come over and seen our set. And our set was, like, during the day. It wasn't that big a deal, necessarily. But he had seen it, and then after we got introduced, then he invited me over to their bus, and we all played hand drums, you know, for a bunch of the afternoon. And then I saw their show that night, and they were just like the big buzz at that festival. They were really coming up, you know, strong with that. And then we kind of kept in touch, maybe two phone calls a year for like the next, you know, 5 years or something like that. And I sat in with them maybe one time in 99 or two times. But the rest of the band doesn't remember me at all, because every time I sat in, there was like 10 other people sitting in at the same time. And then in 2004, I got a call from Travis out of the blue asking if I wanted to sit in Los Angeles, and that could be around, you know, they might be looking for another person to join in, but just come down and have a good time, bring all your gear. So that was like the reconnect, and then I started playing with them a lot. And then since they live out in Colorado, I live out in Los Angeles, I'd have to fly out to Colorado for practice, and I would usually stay at Travis's house. And we're both super night owls. We would just randomly set up gear in one of the rooms, and he's always played, as long as he's played drums, he's played bass and guitar. So we just kept switching up instruments, and not for trying to form any project, more just to play till 4 or 5 in the morning every night and just make up stuff. As we kept doing that, the music, we ended up adding looping pedals to it just to make it more interesting for ourselves. And then when we started playing a little more electronic, that style seemed to lend itself best to the sort of looping that we were doing, you know, very static parts, and for a long time. And eventually, I recommended using this computer program, Ableton Live. And
the granddaddy of all, you know, electronic music programs.
It really is. And I was using it back when it was like Ableton 2, and it was almost more of like a toy, a plug-in. Like, you could do this really cool time stretching thing with it. So when we started using that, that's when things really started accelerating as far as our setup and eventually recording it and, you know, playing it back for ourselves and saying, hey, this is fun, maybe we'll do a gig, you know, with it. And that's when that all started sinking in.
That's interesting. Both of you are rooted in world and traditional music, and whether it's, you know, West African drumming or Latin jazz or bluegrass, it's interesting that you've somehow now gotten to this area of just super futuristic music. I wonder if any of the lessons you've learned from these more traditional medium translate it all into that live breakbeat house dubstep that you do.
Yeah, well, I think at its core, it's almost the ideal scenario, but like both being drummers, because you get used to, you know, stacking parts on each other on the fly, and you get used to seeing how parts weave with each other on the fly. You know, as being drummers, when everyone's got their parts, if everyone's just playing super busy at the same time, it just sounds like a mess. But when you're, you know, when you're looking for those spaces and you're leaving those spaces, then it allows for, you know, more of the magic to happen, you know, that sort of random weaving type of vibe to happen. I think that aspect of it really helps us. It helped us initially in like the whole stacking parts kind of mode, with, you know, doing things, stacking things in a harmonic way, but rhythmically what's going on, you know, really making that work, so it just doesn't sound like a mess coming at you with every stack. And for me, when I play this stuff, we're playing 3 hours a night. The feelings that I get when I'm going through it are a little bit closer to when I'm playing traditional music or playing for ceremonies, more for the fact that it's totally reading the crowd, you know, right? I don't think so much about the stuff that I'm playing as looking out there and watching people dance and maybe looking at one particular person and trying to do something to create that vibe. It's like, okay, my little goal here is to make you dance. And that's what I go through when I'm drumming and stuff. If like you've got the drums together and dancers are all around, I mean, that's all you're really trying to do, you know, unless there's a spiritual leader in that whole process. There's something else going on with the ceremony. So that's sort of the closest that I can equate. And that's opposed to learning songs where you know you've got the chorus and the verse and you got to go through it sort of no matter what, you know? And so if you're playing a song and it's not quite grabbing the people, you know, you end up sort of playing for yourself a little more and trying to play it as great, as best as possible. Might not just feel as like it's going over with the crowd, but you still got to get through it.
I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, Cheese has been playing for almost 20 years now, and they've got an entire catalog of work that the fans have almost this. I mean, they're able, some of these things they demand of you to play certain songs and for you to go to that catalog. Is it freeing, I guess, to be able to break out of that and have a clean slate that you can just come out and you're totally free to do whatever?
Well, on a night to night, for sure. I think that's what keeps it fresh and lets us do, you know, over 200 shows a year. When you have that clean slate, it's sort of like you're in this constant state of saying, what is something new I can put on this today to make it fresh? Because we will go through in Yoda, we'll have themes that sort of come up, or certain beats that come up, or something. But by the time all the other parts get layered into it, it, you know, it's a completely different thing. And so it's sort of, well, what do you do with those themes to not make those even repetitive on a night to night? And eventually it just morphs, just your constant nature of being like, okay, I'm tired of doing that. You know, you want to do something else. So you just really, on a night to night, try to make something happen. And you have to be in that creative open mind space to do it. And the thing about playing in bands with like a huge repertoire like String Cheese is, you know, we're getting ready to do the whole summer thing, and we've got to rehearse, you know, flat out about 2 months straight to like go through all the songs and arrange them how we want for the set list, because we want them to be really special for the people. We want to be sure that we're playing really good and playing our butts off. But to do that, there's a lot of things, you know, to memorize. That's probably over a 200 song catalog as well.
Absolutely.
So different vibe, but for as far as the Yodo playing on a night-to-night basis, one of the things that keeps it fresh is that we're improvising every night, and that we don't have to use that, you know, part of the brain to necessarily memorize stuff or prepare set lists or, you know, listen to songs that we're not tight on. We just, you know, go for it.
Have that completely improvised energy of the crowd vibe. That's the concept behind the group. What happens then when you go into the studio? How do you capture that sort of mentality and put it into a studio album?
Well, it's definitely tricky, because so much of our thing is off of the vibe of the audience. Seeing people get down is a huge, you know, part of, you know, when we feel revved up, you know, to really dig in and go for it. So we just sort of treat things different mindset in the studio, where we listen to songs that we really like, and then we're like, let's do something like that. And then we go on a little sound exploration thing. And after we've sort of collected our sounds, a little palette of sounds, then we hit record and do like what we do live. But there's, you know, that's one of the hardest things to translate, the live thing to the studio thing. And so much of that is off the crowd, so we just know that we're not getting that aspect of it, and you know, and go through, just make the best recording we can.
I spoke with one of your buddies, Aaron Holstein, who played with Travis and Zilla, and you know, when he broke out of that, he went in this certain direction, ended up doing, I guess around 2007 when he put out his Return of the Pudding People EP, he really had this dubstepy element, and I found that coming into your Fire the Lasers album. What were you listening to at that time? Can you even put your finger on it?
Oh yeah, certain artists that we fed off for that was definitely Excision. One of our favorite people, Tipper, favorite DJ. What else? We definitely listen to some Bass Nectar and Pretty Lights, just knowing those two little phenomenons and what are you know, people listening to. And it's so funny with you know, with music, because it's one of those things where, you know, we're playing at a certain place, some random venue or some random festival, they're playing music over a speaker, and you know, constantly being like, you know, what is that? And then we'll find out it's a certain artist, and like at some point you just can't ignore it. It's kind of like, well, that always sounds cool, you know, when we listen to it, you know, you see the way people react to it, and it's sort of in our flow of direction where we're going. So we like going there, and as far as trying to imitate to a certain degree, but it's more like respecting that style of music is really, you know, strong. But our little personal thing with dubstep is we feel like we sort of explored it at the same time. We went to a festival called Shambhala a few years ago, and we saw a DJ Scream from the UK play at this stage called The Village. And there's this one unifying moment of the crowd where he dropped this one certain area of the song, and it was like watching a movie. It was freaky seeing how the crowd reacted at the exact same time, and everybody looking at each other and scrunching their faces and throwing their arms in the air at the same time. And we weren't even next to each other, but when we talked about it later, it was like, you remember that moment? And that thing happened, you know, it was like, that's some powerful stuff.
How do we do
stuff.
That?
How do we do that? And let's, you know, because it was exciting for us too. And since we started doing that, you know, that was a big part about finding our sort of voice in the last 2 years. Because before, we were sort of, you know, yeah, you listen to STS9 and bands that were live, electronic bands that were on the scene, and listen to some of those things, and what do we like from that, but do our own thing, listen to house music, listen to some different styles. But when we started doing the dubstep thing, it was like, oh wow, this is, you know, you feel like that's probably the most of when we started making things our own a little bit, because it's such an exploration into sound textures and rhythms that hadn't been conquered by like a live band. And even still, there's almost no bands we've seen around that are doing it live, so we feel like we've hit this unique spot. And the kids, the generation that's gravitating towards that sound is crazy. You know, 17 to 22 year olds, they don't even care what their older brothers and sisters are listening to. It's like, this is our stuff right here.
Obvious from Excision right here on the UNS podcast. For you to get that really live sound, you're obviously using a lot of these pieces of technology, new gears always coming out, and for you to be able to do a lot of the stuff you do, you need all these samplers and loopers. Is there anything out there, that piece of equipment that you've picked up that you've been like, this is instrumental now, this is absolutely a part of the Yodo protocol?
Oh yeah, there's I've got a multi-touch screen called a Jazz Mutant Lemur, and the way I've got it rigged is, so it's a multi-touch screen, there's an Ethernet cable that comes out of it, and we set up a little Ethernet network between the computer that's behind me and the computer that's over by Travis. And so with this multi-touch screen, I can control both computers, and that's great, because it just lets me dive into all kinds of live effects and live remix aspects of you know, of our performance when it's going by. I have to play one-handed drums a lot, but it's you know, I've worked that out where it feels like it's just another instrument being played during the set. And Travis has a Korg K oscillator, which is like super instrumental in, you know, when we're doing transitioning in certain build-ups and stuff like that. that he goes through it and just has all these swooshing sounds, you know, that it's hard to have just another keyboard dedicated to that. So that piece of gear becomes that, and all sorts of little essential things. What else could be in his setup? Well, definitely he uses a software, Reason from mm-hmm. Propeller Head. He's got all kinds of, you know, sound design and bass sounds mostly that he's programmed onto there. I've got a little pitch shifter in my zone where I can affect my voice so I don't sound like me. I can, you know, get a low voice or a high pitched voice. And so little things like that. We just add one thing once in a while, but after you start using it, it feels like, wow, we can't do a show without it.
And does your lead member say, "I'm sorry, Jason, I can't do that"?
Yeah. The computers have been that, if anything, you know, because we'll just load them up and be like, oh, okay, we're really pushing the CPU. Got to wait till the next computer comes out, and hopefully it'll handle the ideas that we're picturing.
Are there any particular dates that you're absolutely looking forward to, like some big shows, big festivals in which you can see some of your favorite artists? I know Interstellar Meltdown, Tipper's going to be there, so right, you'll be sharing the stage.
Exactly, Interstellar Meltdown, Summer Camp, and Wakarusa, and Lightning in the Bottle, Sonic Bloom, the shows that we're doing with String Cheese at Red Rocks and Horning's Hideout, Underground Sound out in near St. Louis. Camp Barefoot out in Virginia, Bella Madre in Minnesota. You know, the thing about the style of music that we're at is we fit nicely into just about any festival that's going down, especially particularly late night slots. So you'll have these sort of either jam festivals or electronic festivals like Lightning in Bottles, full Burning Man by Doolab Group, which is like those are the big guys out there as far as having the freakiest shit go down and, you know, firing on your senses, kind of like, wow, I've never seen that before. Wow, I've never seen that before. So most jam bands wouldn't fit into being able to play that. So we're really happy to be able to be like, wow, you know, we'll get to go in there, a completely different little voyage for the senses. And then playing the, you know, the bigger ones like Summer Camp, where, you know, we've been more accustomed to playing those festivals. So it's just nice to fit into all those because there's so many more options when we start filling up the weekend dates.
Exactly.
Right? And there's, I think, Nativa out in Maine, like July 4th weekend.
You play thousands and thousands of shows. Yeah. I can't imagine that you have your finger on all that, but that's very impressive. Finally, you've got another live album coming out later this year?
Well, our live albums are coming out every night. You know, we record every night. So you go to www.livedownloads.com, and I would say about 85% of our shows are recorded live, and that goes through our whole system. It doesn't even go to the board, to the front of the house. That's all internal within our setup. So we can get very close to, you know, studio quality on that. And it picks up some of the live mics and some of the live crowd noise. But for the most part, it's really super contained. And we tend to be really psyched on listening back to this, as well as fans that are following us. They want to hear how we sounded at the beginning of the tour 2 years ago. It's a really big difference. But, you know, it's great that we can have our latest stuff of what we feel like we sound like on, you know, a nightly basis come up on live downloads for other people to hear.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being on the UNS podcast. It was a pleasure.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Thank you for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
That's going to do it. Special thanks to Billy Joe Bennett of Tsunami Publicity and, of course, Jason Hand for being on the program. Eodo tours relentlessly. Check out theunts.com to find out where they'll be. Next week, my guest is Matthew Kratz, better known as Kratty. A founding member of the Glitch Mob, Kratty's solo tracks have been popping up all over the place, including America's Best Dance Crew. You don't want to miss it. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints, contact me at anand@theunts.com. Remember to visit theunts.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. and go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. If you want to find out how you can support the Unts in your area, contact Avi at theunts.com. Catch you next week. Yeah.